Welcome to Resilience Rock Sales, your front row seat to rocking your sales game. I'm your host, Stacey Kopass. Today's episode is brought to you by the Academy of Resilience Inner Circle. For more information, head to academyofresilience.com.au. Now on with the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Resilience Rock Sales. Today, I am joined by somebody that I've known for quite a long time, but we haven't reconnected for, it has been ages. I think we just worked out. It's been like 2015, 2016. So it's quite a while and a lot's happened since we were last in contact. And when I was last in contact with Michael Nitschke, our guest today, the main hat he was wearing is one of a real estate salesperson. I was a property owner in the area. I was a property investor in the Adelaide Hills at the time. And Michael was somebody that my partner at the time and I had watched very closely from all of the hundreds of open houses we went to. He was someone that stood out and we knew that when we were ready to sell a house, then Michael was the person that was going to do that. And that did happen. Unfortunately, it was under going through a divorce and all of those things. But I must say that Michael definitely took a lot of stress off us at the time. But yeah, I'm super excited to welcome Michael to the show. So yeah, welcome.
Thanks, Stacey. Thanks for the incredible intro. That's really kind of you. And yeah, we do go back a while and this is an awesome way to reconnect and catch up on a few things, I guess.
Oh, totally, totally. And I know that there's so much that our listeners are going to learn from this discussion as well. It's kind of cool that we get to have a reconnection social catch up, but we just get to be able to share that with so many people as well. And that's the beauty of being able to do things like this. And like where I'd love to start, I would love to start by if you could share, because right now you're wearing many more hats than just being an exceptional salesperson in real estate. But I'd love for you to share a little bit about your journey and sort of what led you to expanding the number of hats that you're wearing today and what that's looking like for you now.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to do that. It's been a really intense and quite an interesting journey. I guess if we kind of look at, you know, the last time we caught up with the sale of your property, shortly after that, I had an incredible tough year in 2018. So my career as a salesperson, ever since I basically finished high school, I've been in real estate sales. I absolutely love it. And for a big portion of that, I worked in a family business. And at that time, the leader of the business was my late father, David. And in 2018, after a 3-year battle with bowel cancer, my dad passed away suddenly. And just prior to him passing away, after years of me begging, pleading for him to think about a succession plan, which he kept kind of refusing to consider, just never believed for a second that he would, you know, one day potentially pass away and the disease would take control of him. He finally relented to me taking a role as a leader in the business and I became a director. And as soon as I became a director, I suddenly was horrified to see that we had millions of dollars of debt that I didn't realize. And we had just 6 weeks of cash left. And like by cash, I mean not money in the bank. I mean, literally in the overdraft, that was all that was left. And before I could ask my dad to find out what the heck's going on and why this has happened, he died, leaving me just all of a sudden the sole director at the age of 30. I'd lost my mum 18 months prior to that. So I was orphaned, leader of a business. I've never run a business before. And, you know, on the home front, I'm lucky enough to be married to a beautiful wife who've got two children, but they were both under the age of 3 at that time. So life just, it was like drinking from a fire hydrant. It was pretty intense. But, you know, fast forward to today, and we can obviously fill some gaps in the podcast that today, I'm healthier and happier than ever. I've got still a wonderful relationship with my wife and kids. And then the business is performing exceptionally well. We're profitable. We're an independent brand now. And through going through such an intense journey and coming out the other side, I decided to put my story onto paper, you know, in terms of a book. Because I think me and anyone of your audience that are tuning in that have lost a parent, or in my case, both at such a young age, I've got so many questions about them that I can never answer. And so I didn't want that for my kids. So I thought I'm going to put this into a book. And it started to kind of evolve and became something that I thought could help other business owners. And last year became, you know, a published author, publishing Leading Out of Loss, which is part memoir, part leadership lessons of everything that's happened. And now we're here.
Oh my gosh. I can't even begin to imagine what that was like for you, especially like the frustration that you must have experienced with your father, you know, working so closely with him and his just stubbornness in not letting you in, knowing even if he was in denial or whatever it was for him of, I guess, his own mortality. But even just as a almost like common sense, isn't it? To even when you've had a scare like that. And as you mentioned, like your mum passing not long before, like before that.
Yeah.
So there's a few big life changes that happened there that I guess for most people, you would kind of think that that would be, maybe I need to put some of these things in place. And so what was it like? Was it something that you sort of just brought it up with him from time to time? Did it escalate over time? What were those sort of conversations with him trying to find out these things and what his plans were?
Yeah, it was interesting. Like in the beginning, I suppose stepping back prior to Dad's diagnosis, you know, my career as a salesperson was pretty much all consuming, and I didn't really give a lot of thought to the business and how that all kind of worked. And even the topic of leadership was something that wasn't probably a direct interest at that time. But you know, after my wedding, and then when we fell pregnant with our first child, Peyton, and she was born, I found becoming a parent, it just expands your worldview. And I started to almost instantaneously think about, you know, a deeper purpose in terms of what I'm doing and life and all those sorts of things. And I guess through all of that, started to really think about, you know, beyond sales, still selling because I enjoy that, but what could I do to kind of help with having a more active role in the business? My dad's diagnosis actually happened a few months after Peyton was born. So it all kind of all happened at once. And I guess in the beginning, it was a suggestion more than anything. I just kind of thought that at that time, I'd never had any dealings with death or serious illness. So it was all really foreign to me. And I just thought it made sense to plan for the worst, hope for the best, and fight like hell. My dad's approach to his cancer was incredible from a physical point of view. Like he was relentless with any surgery, any chemotherapy, radiotherapy. He lent into that and did everything he could to make to make the treatment work. And he was just so convinced that he would beat it that he kind of he treated the actual diagnosis and the mortality part with a lot of shame. And he was someone that widely respected in all the circles that he was in, but someone that was very difficult to get close to. You know, he would really keep his cards close. It was something that he just refused to talk about. And I kind of accepted in the beginning. But when my mum and dad were separated a long time prior to that, when mum passed away suddenly at the age of 55 from a heart attack, I just intensified my pressure on Dad basically to say, this is real, you've got to do something. And it just didn't seem to be something he was interested in.
Wow. I can't imagine what that was like. And as you said, you've got your own stuff going on, but
yeah.
And it's interesting too, as you've said, if he was somebody that was very hard to get close to, that's a difficult conversation to have even with somebody you are close to.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, and then I think that's why in the beginning, I probably was quite gentle about more so to suggesting it as an idea. And yeah, I think just dealing with what we did with the loss of mum, I just, the gloves are off. I said, you know, let's think about this seriously.
It's bigger than him then at that point, isn't it? Because
yeah,
it almost feels like not only stubborn, but a little bit selfish in a way, because you've got all of the staff and all of this sort of stuff. It's a business. You've got people that are managing their properties. There's so many people that would impact. So when he did finally let you in, what was that like?
It was a blur, you know, because I've been wanting it for so long. And this wasn't a financial thing for me, which is ironic, particularly given what I found out, but it was literally just a leadership thing for me, because over that period, like Dad was initially given 18 months to live, and he doubled that diagnosis, so full credit to what he did. But for that 3-year period, the business was basically rudderless. We didn't have a leader. You know, we lost a lot of good people because it just didn't feel like it was going anywhere. And then, you know, poorer or sort of average performers were kind of given an environment without any accountability. So that got a lot worse in that respect. And so when I was finally given that opportunity, I remember, you know, being sent a heap of documents to sign from advisors of dads. And I just signed them because I didn't read them, I'll be honest, because it was my dad. I trusted him. And I thought, finally, we're going to be able to just, I just was scared that he was going to change his mind. And then, you know, when I found out this revelation that there's actually absolutely nothing holding the business together, and then to not have that opportunity to kind of discuss it, or even just, there was no handover at all. It was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
So how did you feel when you really discovered what the reality of the situation was like?
I was shocked, you know, and I was obviously grieving because I just lost my dad. And the grief, it's interesting when you look at, I know today's podcast isn't about grief, but when you look at like the loss of, you know, for me losing both parents in the way that I did, my relationship with my mum was very different to the one that I had with my dad. And so the grief when we lost dad, for me, a lot of it was one of lost opportunity, because, you know, not only was I trying to obviously do something about the business, but also really wanted to get closer to him. And it just wasn't really something, you know, he was wanting to do with anyone. It was just the way he was. So I was really sad, obviously, as you are in that time, but obviously just dealing with incredible shock. I remember going home to my wife. You know, we had a 6-month-old and a just under 3-year-old toddler. And she was feeding our youngest on the couch and my other daughter was playing. And I remember just going home, bursting into tears, something on the ground next to her, just saying, we're going to lose everything, you know, and I haven't, somehow it's my fault, but I haven't done anything. I don't really understand how this outcome is here for me at this stage in life. And it was a real low point. And I didn't really get a chance to kind of process it quickly because straight away there were things that I had to get into. Like, for example, the day after my dad died, I had to meet with our bank. You know, they obviously had a very strong relationship, well, a strong interest in the business, we'll put it that way, given what I discovered. And they wanted to know that there was a succession plan and that this was going to be really smooth. And I had to just bravely say, yeah, absolutely, you know, there is. But the reality was I was scrambling. I was completely lost. It was insane.
My gosh, it's one of those say yes and figure it out moments, was it?
Exactly, yeah. And I think it was a big part of, like, there's a lot of lessons of resilience in my journey that I've learned. And that was a big one for me. I think that without realizing it, like the impact of taking a calculated risk, now that probably wasn't overly calculated, but taking a risk and going all in meant that there was no turning back. You know, I basically was back against the wall, faced with losing everything. So it kind of created this environment where my learning curve was exceptional. I went from not being able to read a balance sheet or a profit and loss or even know what they are to being in a position where I am now, where we haven't made it by any stretch, but I feel really, really confident in leading and getting the best out of people and setting a vision for a business and making that a reality.
So was there that moment of, as you said, fronting up to the bank and just taking complete responsibility, complete ownership for that?
Yeah.
Were there ever moments where you thought, oh my gosh, it just would have been easier to walk away?
Definitely. And it was interesting, like a lot of people around me were saying that I should do that. You know, they were saying, just why bother? You know, take an acquisition deal, just sell the asset of the business, and a bit of luck, you might not have any loss to deal with and you can just move on. But I couldn't, it's hard to explain, but there was an intuition within me that was supported by my wife at the time that I felt like this could actually be something that could be incredible for me. You know, this could actually be a great opportunity. I've always been passionate about real estate, as you know, firsthand, and looking after people within our community. And I'm so passionate about the area where we trade in the Adelaide Hills. And so I thought, what if this is actually the only opportunity or the opportunity for me to lead a business? And if I can, in an area that I'm passionate about, and if I can figure this out, it would be an awesome story and it would be a great, you know, legacy for my family and for myself, and be able to really impact an area that I really cared about. So I thought, if I'm going to go down, I may as well go down having an absolute royal crack at this and hopefully it works out. And I'm, you know, very fortunate that it has so far.
Yeah. And I know you've mentioned your wife, Kat, a few times.
I have
to. So, yeah. Look, it's always important to have good strong relationships around you. I think that doing something like that probably wouldn't have been possible without having support like that.
Yeah.
So what sort of impact did that have on your relationship? Obviously having the two little girls and that, what was that like for your relationship?
It was all consuming in the beginning. Like it was just because it was so overwhelming. And my wife's helped me a lot with being really open and talking about, you know, how I'm feeling and what I'm going through, which probably something that I struggled a lot with growing up because my home environment was a little bit unusual in the sense that my parents, so when I was in high school, shortly after I started, they started the business back then. So back in 2000. And they separated shortly afterwards because the business just completely changed their relationship and it changed, you know, it created a lot of stress and they didn't handle it all that well. So after they split up, my mum had some mental health challenges. She was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And my dad kind of just internalized things all the way through. And I was really determined and through talking with Kat that, you know, I wasn't going to internalize this. Like if we were going to do it, we're going to do it together in the sense that like Kat's a teacher. She's not at all involved in business or real estate, which is actually really good because we've got that real clean break. But I talk really openly if I'm struggling and if I'm doing well. I just kind of, you know, we try and wear our hearts on our sleeves together. And then that's taught me then as a leader to do the same with my people. So, you know, who I am on the podcast with you today is exactly the same as what I am, you know, at home and with clients and everything in between. It's just a really authentic way to live. And it's, it helps with your resilience, I think, to just be at ease with who you are.
Yeah, it's definitely a big one, isn't it? Just, there's nothing to hide then. And I think that's the thing that is so interesting because you see so many people that are, you know, trying to, for whatever reason it is, whether it's an insecurity, an inadequacy, trying to impress, whatever it is, they're putting so much effort and energy to building up this persona.
Spot on.
But that just takes so much energy. And then really, if you're going to make connections, like if you're connecting with people as this persona, then it's not going to be sustainable because again, it's not authentic. And so I love that you've mentioned that those things had really helped. And especially it's interesting because I guess growing up in that environment where there wasn't that open communication or people talking about their feelings or any of that sort of stuff. So obviously it wasn't something that you'd learned or saw demonstrated. So it's quite remarkable that then you were able to, as you said, almost intuitively then be able to evolve into that. And especially at someone that was as young as you were at the time too.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that I did. I'm honestly grateful for everything that's happened in my life, even though there's been a lot of tough times, a lot of bad change. And I think when you go through bad change in your life, that's where you really discover how resilient you are. You know, it's not when things are good, that's quite straightforward. But when you're going through a difficult time, that's when you find out what you've got in the tank. I'm genuinely really grateful for everything that's happened because it's led me to this very moment today and moments still to come. You know, like I think if you can kind of find a way to be empowered around that, then that's when you can really have a genuinely happy and enjoyable life. It really broke my heart when obviously losing Dad was really, really sad. But where it really hit me was realizing when I really understood that he'd worn so much shame around having cancer and potentially his mortality that then to extend that into finding out that he was also hiding this terrible financial secret out of fear for how that would be perceived or judged. It's just so sad because I can't help but think that would have contributed to his illness because he's just dealing with so much internal rubbish that doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't. You're better off embracing being genuine and authentic and, you know, being human.
That's huge. And as you said, it's internalizing that stuff that does cause disease. And you think about even when you think a thought that creates stress in the body, you feel it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you actually then let something go, whether it's talking to someone, writing it down, keeping a journal, doing all these sort of things, anytime you can actually release any of that stuff, then there's a feeling of lightness in the body. That was, I heard years ago, they said dis-ease causes disease. And it's definitely true. And I love also that you touched on, again, when you talked about that responsibility and that ownership and then gratitude, because they're, you know, two big resilience rocks in my world. And I love hearing you talk about that. It's like, we've written the same playbook here.
and it's facts. Like you know, like my story with you and your great audience, like I'm not sharing it to have anyone feel sorry for me with some of the low points or even any level of sadness, because it's actually a good thing. Like it makes me stronger every time I talk about it. And I think talking about challenges that you're going through and your story, owning your story, is how you become really strong and resilient. It's an important thing to do. And we don't do it enough.
I agree with you. And yeah, reflecting on even just my own journey of, I had mentors that were telling me, you need to tell your story. If you don't, you're being selfish. Because there was just that whole fear about telling the story and being Australian and the tall poppy thing. And yeah. I don't know if you ever had those moments, but I know personally, I thought, well, I don't want to talk about myself because everyone's going to think I'm a total wanker for talking about myself. But then, as you said, once you step out there and you step out there from a place of wanting to be of service and then seeing how well that's received. And I've learned that as humans, we connect deeper with other people's adversity than we do with their success.
Yeah.
And so it's important to share the challenging parts. And one of the things I remember, and I'm sure that you've worked with mentors and stuff over this journey as well, in order to get to the point where you can get on stage and share a fantastic keynote, publish the book. I don't know if you ever had any of these moments, and I like that you said that you sort of feel stronger by sharing your story. And I remember speaking with people when I first started out as well. And one of my questions and a little bit of a fear I felt was, would I become desensitized to my own story by telling it?
Yeah.
Because, and it's like, but like you, I feel more connected to it. I feel stronger. And I feel that then it's almost like you learn more from it every single time. And then when you get to then have a discussion with somebody and then almost see your story back reflected back through their eyes, then that can be really interesting as well. If we start to talk, if we sort of talk about your transition into leadership.
Yeah.
So how have you felt that your ability then to be vulnerable, to share the challenges, to do all that sort of stuff as a leader, how do you feel that that's helped you to grow the business and inspire and empower the people in your team?
It's been huge. I think I did it intentionally in the beginning. I just did it in all honesty. It was part of my, you know, coping mechanism of what I was dealing with and part of what my wife was encouraging me to talk more and share. But I think what it does is it creates this awesome environment of collaboration and trust within your team. You know, the team that we have today is an incredible, resilient group and really high performers, not just in terms of like volume of sales, which is like one metric, but they're just a bunch of great humans that are doing great work out there. And I think in the beginning, our team was very disjointed and disconnected. And you know, when you come in with this very like polar opposite leadership style to what my dad was doing, and that's not to say it was bad, it's just different to what I brought to the table. We had a lot of people that didn't like that. And so they decided that that was a good time for them to leave. So we've had a bit of a reset and we've got an incredible group. Still a number of key people that have been with the business now for over 15 years, which is so awesome. But then also some great new talent that have been attracted to what we call our Everest mission, our vision for the future. They've, you know, attracted to that journey and want to be a part of it.
That's awesome. And also I noticed you also mentioned that part of that journey of, you know, turning the ship around was to become an independent agency, because obviously you were part of a big sort of a bigger organization. Mm-hmm. So what was that like as far as stepping away from that? What were the differences that you found then going out on your own as a business rather than, I guess, being connected into the bigger network?
Yeah, it was an interesting journey. And look, the franchise that we were a part of, or the group that we were a part of, look, they're great. There's a lot of really good agencies around the country and I think in New Zealand as well that, you know, are members of this group. I've still got great friends that are part of that too. I think the reason for us deciding to become independent is that, you know, we, by virtue of the situation that kind of happened back in 2018 and starting to kind of change and improve the business, there just wasn't really a playbook or really a franchise playbook for that. And so we kind of lent on each other through the vulnerability and, you know, the way we collaborated around issues that the business had. And we kind of emerged from that going, well, this kind of makes sense to actually just be an independent agency. And we discussed it a lot. And, you know, fortunately in South Australia where we're based, there's a large percentage of the offices around the state are actually independent. So it kind of is a natural fit. But it was amazing the difference when we did rebrand, the impact that had certainly within our community, but more importantly within the team. That was just such a proud moment after, you know, a business that was on life support where our entire vision was making the next payroll to survive, and then to be in a situation where we could afford to rebrand and really own our story and who we were was just an awesome feeling. And it's continued to be better and better ever since we did that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what's just come to mind as you were sharing that, I heard a phrase many years ago that it says people support what they create.
I like that.
It really shows that to me, that again, if they're part of that, it's almost like as a team, you're starting something new. As you said, the Everest mission, it's almost like you're starting from the, we've just decided to do this and we're doing it all from the very beginning and we're doing it all together as a team. And that sounds like that would have been a really uniting factor.
Yeah, it was and continues to be so cool. I love the concept of an Everest mission for your business, bit of a tongue twister, in the sense that, you know, you can imagine like trying to climb Mount Everest. I've never done it, but to imagine this incredible journey. Obviously, it's a team effort. You can't do it solo. You can plan this journey, but there's going to be deviations and challenges that you have to adapt to. And so our Everest mission for Nitschke is to be the number one real estate agency in the Adelaide Hills. But the way we qualify that is by sure number of sales and number of properties that we manage, but probably equally, if not more important, it's the impact and our reputation within the community that we serve. And then also our reputation as a destination employer where, you know, the team is so proud to work here and people aspire to kind of join us. And that's a real motivator to make sure that we're not just making decisions to make a quick sale and scale up a little bit more in that regard. It's actually got to be holistic and it's much more who we are.
And I guess by nature, real estate, anything that's predominantly sales-based, generally, there's going to be strong KPIs. There's always those sort of targets. So how do you actually then, particularly, I guess, transitioning from being a salesperson primarily to then being a leader of salespeople and still be a salesperson yourself?
It's a lot.
Like, it's a bit of mental gymnastics to try and figure out like what that would look like. So how did you do that? Was that something that you sought out help to figure out what that would look like? I'd love to hear what that process was like for you. And I guess also to the decision to, I guess, wear those two hats as well, rather than do one or the other. What was that thought process like for you?
Yeah, well, the decision to wear both was out of necessity because the business, like with 6 weeks of cash left, the quickest way to get revenue was, you know, humbly through me, because I was sort of the highest performing agent at that time and had the runs on the board to be able to make that happen. So I had to sell and sell quickly, you know, so that was out of necessity. And for me, if I could wave a magic wand around what I'd like my role to be within the business, it's more, I would love to just be purely at that visionary end of the business full time and in leadership, whether that's coaching salespeople or you know, the broader team generally around their goals and the business's goals. Unfortunately, the size that we are and the stage we're at in our Everest mission means that I'm still involved in sales, and I really enjoy it. So it's not like I want to stop because I hate it. It's just that I feel that I'm best used in a leadership stage. And so that's a big part of, I guess, our overall plan is to, you know, get the right people. So people that match our values and our you know, DNA of who we are in the right seats in sales in particular to grow our sales team so that I can sort of carefully step away from that to be able to do what I'm really passionate about. What you were saying before about like KPIs and numbers, they're so important. They really are. Like you can have an incredible vision, great values, but you've got to still perform. I mean, at the end of the day in business, like we're a for-profit, not a not-for-profit. We need to be able to, you know, fuel the business's engine. And by doing that, it actually creates more opportunities for our team within it to be able to, you know, internally promote and achieve more, especially in the context of our Everest mission. We set KPIs, you know, for our team. And what we're mostly looking for is consistency. I think that consistency compounds, you know, if a team member can, rather than a salesperson having this mammoth day on the phones, ringing 200 people in a day, and then not ringing anyone for the rest of the week, I'd much rather see them pick a number that they own and hit it. And then when you get to that level, you know, it's like that analogy of squeezing the lemon. See if you can do just one or two more. You know, you squeeze the lemon, you get some juice, you squeeze it again. There's always just that little bit more. And if you compound that effort over a period of time, that's how you improve and make, you know, tomorrow better than today.
Yeah, it's awesome because again, and going back to something you said before there about you needed sales and you needed them quick. Yeah. And I feel that that's something that comes up a lot, particularly if it's coming towards end of month, end of quarter, you know, those type of things. There is, I guess there's those times where there is a bit of that short-term burst. But yes. I guess if people are consistent over time and then just do that, you know, one rep more each day, then hopefully they shouldn't get to the point where there is that chaos at the end of a quarter. Have you found that with that consistency and not having to do that as much? I guess there's always going to be some things that are out of your control, but do you find the consistency is helping that?
Yeah, definitely. Like, and it's a really good analogy for resilience. You know, like in life, like Murphy's Law is undefeated. There's going to be bad stuff that will happen in my future because that's just not being negative. It's just that's how life is. You know, there's curveballs. We're all dealing with grief, heartache, pain, things that you can't control. But I think the more consistent you can be around, you know, you focus on a vision, like in our case that I've shared with you earlier, and then you break that down into really achievable, consistent actions. The bad stuff will still happen, but you'll be in a position where you can resiliently then draw down on what's the next move I need to make and follow, you know, effectively your intuition against what you're looking to achieve.
I like you talking about intuition in the context of sales as well, because it is something that is, again, so often is just so numbers driven, process driven. But then when you bring that into it, and again, it's like the human factor as well. I really love that. And so as far as being wearing, again, those dual hats, I'm curious to see, what does that look like as far as the coaching conversation of the other sales team? And how do you coach yourself in the same way?
Oh, great question. Yeah, I guess like coaching myself is really around just looking after myself. I'm pretty confident if I can bring a high amount of energy into my day with, you know, great sleep and some movement and time with family, time for myself, eat well, then, you know, I know that I'll have the energy to do the actions that I've committed to achieve the outcome I'm looking for. So for me, that's kind of really, for me, I focus on that energy first because everything else kind of flows from that. For our team, a coaching conversation always starts with their why in terms of what they're looking for. I think a lot of sales leaders in particular make the mistake of just prescribing KPIs to an agent or in another industry, you know, a salesperson, and not really getting any buy-in for them as to why they're even in the industry to begin with and what are they trying to achieve. And then once we know that, then the coaching conversation gets pretty straightforward. You know, you set the numbers against that, and then I like to approach a coaching conversation with a lot of curiosity to obviously check in with the team member to see how they're traveling. And, you know, if things are off track, just asking them a little bit about that around why do you think that is? And, you know, what, you know, I've got some ideas, but before I prescribe some things to you, what do you think are some actions you need to take to get this thing back on track? You can't really get too far and you can't scale your business if you're constantly providing motivation for people. They need to be intrinsically motivated around what they're trying to achieve. And you're just there to kind of coach and guide them up that path.
Do you have like a set structure as far as how and when you have those conversations? Or do you have a little bit of a mix of those more, I guess, intentional, structured scheduled ones, as well as some more informal on the fly, sort of keeping your finger on the pulse as it goes. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. So structurally, depending on the level of experience the team member has and how kind of intensive, I suppose, they're needing coaching. On the newer end of the scale, it would be like a weekly or even sometimes a daily conversation, depending on where they're at. Other more experienced people, you know, it can be monthly or even slightly longer than that. It's really the structured side of it. But then for me, I really try and engage with all of my team pretty well daily, not so much around, you know, are you performing? Have you done that thing that you said you do? No micromanagement. It's more just really, I just want to connect with their energy to see if things are on track. And if there's, without getting too sort of spiritual and woo-woo about it, but just to, it can really feel if someone's just dealing with something that is going to affect them in the future or now, and then you can support them, you know, better if you're in tune with what they're going through.
Oh, look, the woo-woo is welcome here. It's interesting too, because I get asked a lot about having difficult conversations, and my answer is usually if you have regular informal conversations, you don't often need to have difficult conversations. And much like, as you said, you can sort of tune in to just get a sense, like they might not tell you something's off, but you can then probe a little bit more if you just get that, as you said, the energy is not quite there. So I agree. And I think it's great leadership to have those sort of informal conversations on a regular basis, because then they're also more likely to come to you rather than wait for you to ask at times as well. Do you find that?
I do. And I find that also then the coaching relationship extends throughout the team. So then we have team members helping each other rather than, you know, you want to, one of the situations I found myself in the beginning was, you know, as a sort of the main cog in the sales team, is I had every question going through me all the time. And I was just so keen to make the business work that I would answer all these questions and then more would come. And I learned through, I'm a big reader and listen to a lot of great podcasts like yours, Stacey. One of the books that I discovered was a book by Michael Steiner called The Coaching Habit, which is an awesome read for anyone wanting to improve their coaching and their questions. And it teaches you to be curious, you know, to actually ask the right questions so that the student or the team member can unlock their own lessons from that and you know, are empowered around it. You know, you were saying as well before about difficult conversations, and in sales, there's plenty of those. A great saying that I've discovered in my journey is to be clear is to be kind. You're actually doing the right thing by giving bad news straight, you know, no waffle, just tell it how it is. In my business, if a team member is not doing well, I'll say, hey, this is not at the standard that we thought we'd see from you, that you're not performing. Let's talk about why that might be. For me, the courage to do that now is quite straightforward because I've seen the benefits of it. But like, I've had some really hard conversations in my personal life. Like one of the hardest conversations I ever had to have is after mum passed away, I had to go and visit my grandparents, her parents, and tell them. And I wanted to do that in person. And so when you have to tell your grandparents that their daughter, your mum, has died, it's about as hard a conversation as you'll have to have. But the impact of speaking clearly, telling it how it is, so you can support that person from that moment on. And the second that you say the bad news, it gets easier. So just get it out there.
Yeah, it is. I think it's once it is out there, it's good. And that just prompted me. And it was something I either read or listened to, and it was very, very recently. And it said, in the absence of feedback, the person that you would be giving the feedback to will automatically assume it's negative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought that's, as you said, to be clear is to be kind. And I just love that disconnected those two dots for me. And I think that that's super. And so I think as a leader, as a coach, if there's ever any doubt, like if people are listening, because we've got people that are in sales and in sales leadership listening, but if you're ever in any doubt about whether to give that feedback, again, have your energy in this place that you are delivering it with kindness, but just to know that if you don't actually share that, then the likelihood is that the person's going to be believing that they're actually doing a worse job than what they are. I really love that. And the beauty of, again, being, as you said, being a reader, like I love reading as well, reading and podcasts. And it's never been easier to be able to have access to all of these amazing people that are either sometimes they might be just academics, or they might be people that are specialist trainers, or they're people then like yourself that have got all of these skills through personal experience in sales and leadership and resilience. And I just think it's really important to be constantly leaning in. Obviously, don't get too, you don't want to get too overwhelmed and be listening to so much stuff that you're never implementing. But I think it's really important to be constantly looking at that and constantly growing. And I guess just with that, I'd love to hear your perspectives as well. And now that you're in a position where, you know, you're leading other salespeople, you're recruiting and actively looking for good people into your team and to develop those people, like, what role do you feel that resilience has in sales success overall?
It's crucial. It really is. It's funny, pre all of what I've shared with you, like when I was, and before we worked together with your property in the hills, I was obsessed with what people thought of me. I was really insecure, and I'd be just really quite worried about that. And you know, resilient people, they're caring and compassionate, don't get me wrong, but they don't care one bit about what people think of them. There's a great quote that we've literally got just outside this office that I'm sitting in, framed in on the wall in our business, which is the Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena, which talks about that unless, and I'll paraphrase it, but unless you've lived my journey and you're in the arena with me, your face marred with blood, sweat, tears, and dust, absorbing all the blows and the things that I've overcome, I don't care about the people in the stands and their opinion of me. It has no relevance whatsoever. And I think if you can get to that point as a salesperson, then what you'll really realize is that it's about remaining consistent and doing the actions that you know you need to do. You know, it's funny in life, we constantly wait to feel like doing the action and then we do it. I love, you know, exercising, but there's plenty of times when my alarm goes off in the morning and I'm like, I just want to stay in bed. But every time I go, I feel so good and so glad that I did. If you're a salesperson listening, we know that by ringing and connecting with higher volumes of people is going to improve our chances of more appointments. More appointments is going to lead to more sales. But we wait to feel like prospecting when it's like, you know what, why don't you just do the action? Because you know you're going to feel good at the end and be disciplined around that. So resilient people do that. And that's why I think that the best salespeople that you see are often the most resilient.
I love that. It's like those laws of inertia. And I tell you what, I do not miss the Adelaide Hills winters. So I can, when that alarm goes off in the depths of July,
oh man,
last thing you want to do is get out and go and do something. My gosh, I did 8 winters in the Adelaide Hills, and
that's kind.
I like sunny Sydney winters now. But again, it's that law of inertia, isn't it? It's the effort it takes to get something moving is always far greater than once it's in motion. And I think, again, quotes are so valuable because you can sum up so many things just in, you know, a phrase. And I love it was a Maxwell Maltz quote that you can't steer a parked car.
Yeah.
Just get things in motion. And sometimes it can be any action, as long as it's some action to get yourself in motion, can be helpful as well. And with that, is there anything that you do intentionally to build and nurture your resilience personally and then also in the people that are in your team as well?
Yeah, I think I just remain really aware of the tools that have got me here. So for me, a lot of them we've talked about over our chat today, you know, talking to people is a major key. Movement. It's amazing that like movement is 1.5 times more effective than counseling or medication against depression, you know. So simply moving your body helps. Taking time for yourself, and talked about taking calculated risks before as well, and then embracing the power of consistency. I think they're probably for me the main drivers that I focus on. But I try to, you know, I'd set big goals. It's really important to do that, but I try not to get too lost in outcomes I can't control. I try and find the measures that I can control within that. You know, in the beginning when everything was turning to chaos, back in 2018, 2019, I couldn't control the amount of cash that we had in our bank account. And unfortunately, I still can't control that. It'd be nice if I could, but it's just not a reality. But what I could control is, you know, my energy, my attitude from my team. They're looking at their new leader, who they all knew, like I didn't pretend to have all the answers. They knew that I didn't have them. So if I could be upbeat and consistent and authentic with them and paint a brighter future that's just around the corner and stay with that energy. Very hard to do that, but I was able to, and I still try and do that today. And that holds us in really good stead.
They're definitely great things that you're doing, and also great advice for people to take away on that one as well. And you're so right about the movement being so crucial. One of my coaches, Craig Ballantyne, he always says, movement beats meditation, action beats anxiety, and work beats worry. That's like his sort of taglines. And I'm like, they're just so good. And sometimes I find myself in a flat moment and it's like, oh, I'm just going to just ponder for a bit. I'm like, motion beats meditation, action beats anxiety, work beats worry. And it's just like a good thing to just snap out of it.
Self-beliefs, isn't it? Like, I think your beliefs impacts your feelings impacts your thoughts, and then your thoughts impacts what you actually do in your actions. So just finding an ability to believe in yourself is the beginning.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And speaking about energy and movement, there's one more little twist on the Resilience Rocks piece. Is that there is a musical twist, because resilience and rock are just super important parts of my world, and music is actually a resilience rock in my world. Music is such a powerful way to actually build resilience, change energy, all of that sort of stuff. So with that in mind, do you have a go-to song that if you needed to shift your energy, get yourself up and moving, what would be your go-to song that you play just to get yourself going?
Great question. Look, if you ask any of my team, they'd probably all agree that I've got a suspect music taste. And it's funny, at the moment, a few of our team members are going to the Taylor Swift concert. So there's a lot of Taylor Swift right now. That's not what I would personally choose.
Thank goodness. I was going to say, oh my gosh, I don't know that we could be friends after that. But anyway.
I've got a fairly wide-ranging eclectic taste, but I'm a big, growing up, I played a lot of basketball. So for me, a lot of with basketball comes the hip hop and rap scene. So, you know, it would be most likely some rap, and it could be any of the big guys that everyone knows. But I do like Nas in particular. So Nas, a good song of his would be epic.
All right, cool. Well, I will make sure that we do find one. There is a Resilience Rocks playlist on Spotify that I've been curating over the years. So if there's a specific song there from Nas, I will make sure that we add that to the list. And it's just super helpful. And look, music is just something 3 to 5 minutes, put it on, move with it, sing, do whatever. It's just incredible. I don't know there's anything else that can change your energy in a shorter space of time. So I'm glad that music is a big part of your world as well. I've just loved this conversation today. I love your vulnerability. I love you sharing so openly about how you've approached all of the things in your world. And as I said, when we opened up, you stood out as a real star performer, as an agent, even in your 20s. And it's just been such a pleasure to be able to see how you've been able to grow and evolve and come to this place now where not only are you a great agent, but a CEO, a leader, an author, a speaker, a coach, dad, and all these, a husband, and all of these things. Go you. And I'm just, I just say, I think you're the epitome of Resilience Rock Sales. And I'm just super grateful that you've been able to join me today.
Thank you, Stacey. It's really kind of you to say that. And it's been an absolute pleasure. I've enjoyed it. And it's been really good to reconnect as well.
Awesome. And so if anyone has been listening to this today and they are like, oh my gosh, I need to get a bit of Michael in my life, where would be the best place for people to reach out and have a conversation with you?
Thank you. Look, I would love that. You can look me up on the socials for sure, but otherwise on my website, which is michaelnitschke.com.au, if you jump on there, I have a weekly email. It's a free content that is thought-provoking content around leadership, and there's a lot of resilience that is obviously packed into that. So it's a free resource, and yeah, I would love for anyone interested to jump on.
Amazing. Well, I will make sure that wherever you are watching or listening to this episode, that I will pop all of those links below so it makes it easier for you to reach out and connect. And until the next time that we see each other on Resilience Rock Sales, be your best.
Thanks for joining us again this week on Resilience Rock Sales. Don't just listen though, take action. The best sales professionals are always learning. Head over to resiliencerocks.com now to go backstage and get the resources mentioned today to help rock your sales goals.